Hello, welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. It's me on my own again. It's the second instalment, let's say, of the focus, our month-long focus on running and mental health. And today we've got an interview. We've got an interview with one of the best young British female endurance runners. Her name's Jenny Nesbitt. She actually will talk a little bit on the show about the Valencia 10K, which she's just run this weekend. She went fifth on the Welsh all-time 10K list. So well done to that, Jenny. She's Commonwealth Games finalist. She's a GB athlete at cross-country over a series of years. And she's the European 10,000-metre cup bronze medalist a few years ago. She's obviously a very talented athlete. She has been through, as she'll talk to herself, about some difficult stages in her life and how she's managed those, I guess, through running. So it's a really interesting story. And I guess we're going to go over to Jenny very shortly. If you enjoy the show, as always, please rate and review. Hit that subscribe button to get the show every week without fail into your inbox, whether you do that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everything like that. Give it a crack. We love those reviews. Keep them coming in. We've had a few. We'll share those next, I think, in 2 weeks' time when me and Robbie are back to have a little bit of a summary of this month's focus. We've had a few lovely stories in from people. Please keep sending those in. As always, we will try and play those on the fourth show of the month. So you've got a bit of time now, but please get those in and we will pick out the best ones to share with you as an audience. So thanks. Yeah, keep getting involved. And here's Jenny with her show now. Bye-bye.
On today's show, we are talking to GB distance runner Jenny Nesbitt. How are you doing, Jenny?
Hi. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well. Very well. Whereabouts are you based at the moment?
So currently I'm living in Cardiff. I've been here for nearly 2 years now. So Great. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it.
What's the January Cardiff weather like? Are you managing to get out and train without being covered in rain and wind and that sort of thing?
Sort of. I mean, Cardiff is kind of quite well known for its pretty abysmal weather. Yeah. So I've been caught in a lot of rainstorms, but yeah, it's not too bad. It's quite mild still, so that's all right.
Great. Great stuff. And obviously it's been quite a short career you've had. Are you 24 now?
Yeah, 24, 25 this month.
So okay, I feel like all right. Well, happy birthday for later this month. But you've got a long and successful career to go. But you've already had quite a lot of ups and downs in your career. Yeah. You've won various national titles. You've run for Wales and the Commonwealth Games. You third in the European Cup, 10,000 metres before, a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I was. That seems like a long time ago now. 2015, I think. Whoa. It was, or maybe 2016. It was quite a long time ago.
But all of these, they pale in comparison, well, according to the layman, to your run last week, where you're the third fastest female park runner of all time.
I know, if I'd have run 5 seconds faster, I'd have been the quickest.
No way. It's crazy that the one thing people will talk about is the park run rather than all these fantastic things you've achieved over the course of your career. It's quite a hard pill to swallow, I guess.
Yeah, although I feel like it is something that is relatable to pretty much anyone, really. Anyone can go and run a 5K. So I think it's nice to kind of be on that same sort of like page as the rest of the people who get out there and do it.
Yeah. Where was it? Where did you run that time?
In Cardiff.
Okay, great.
So yeah, I think it's been reported as one of the faster park run courses in the UK. So it's a good chance to try and run as fast as possible.
Yeah, excellent. And so obviously you're going really well at the moment. So what's your focus for the next few months? What are you training towards?
Yeah, so kind of having a bit of a mix up this season. I usually kind of stick to cross country and the roads between like January and March, but Chris, my coach, has decided to stick me on an indoor track in February. So bearing in mind I've never ever in my life stepped foot on one, it should be quite interesting.
I've kind of got their own facility though.
What? Yeah, they have. They've got one, but I usually tend to kind of sidestep it straight to the outdoor track if I'm ever okay. Doing a track session. a little bit apprehensive, but I'm kind of excited about having a new challenge.
Yeah, excellent. And you're off to Valencia this weekend. So this obviously, we were interviewing before the weekend. You're off to Valencia 10K.
Yeah, so yeah, off to Valencia on Friday to race on Sunday. And it's a really good course and it's pretty fast. There's actually, I saw the entry list earlier and there's a woman in our race who's run 29:57 or something.
Whoa.
So it's pretty stacked.
Yeah.
But hopefully, yeah, get dragged round to a decent time, which would be quite a good start to the year.
Fantastic. And we want to talk about, we'll talk a little bit about all your achievements and where you are at the moment, but it's good for us to take a look back at how you started in the sport. So it's quite a, like I'd say, an untypical, if I can say the word, introduction. So sort of take us back to your childhood. How was, sort of, whereabouts did you grow up?
So as a, like between the age of 0 and about 12, I must have lived in about 10 different houses, went to about 7 different schools.
Wow.
So we moved around a lot. So it was quite disrupted. Yeah. As a child, but one thing that always remained the same was I was really, really sporty. I did every single sport going, football, hockey, rugby, tennis, netball,
yeah,
you name it, I did it. One thing I didn't do was run, and I hated it. I stuck my nose up at any form of running.
Why was that, do you think? What was it about you didn't like?
I have no idea. It was just like, looking back, it's so bizarre, because now, like, I feel like I'm one of the most uncoordinated people, and like, can't do anything but just put one foot in front of the other. But at the time, I just don't know if it was just being just a bit lazy, or just because I hadn't really tried it. I didn't really know if I enjoyed it or not. So yeah, I think, like, if I look back to my really early years as a child, it just makes me laugh a little bit.
Yeah. And how was it, like, with all that moving, did you find it difficult to settle? Were you happy as a young teenager?
Definitely found it difficult to settle, and I think especially when you're younger, you want to make friends, and if you're constantly moving from one school to another, it's really hard to do that. So I definitely had, I feel like I had quite an unsettled childhood, which I think definitely impacted me as like a young teenager. But I feel like it's definitely made me, I feel like I'm a very independent person, and I think that's partly down to that, as a young child, kind of having to kind of just fend for myself a little bit.
Yeah. Wow. And I've sort of read an article about kind of your troubles then, and it mentioned how you won an award of the happiest girl in school, but secretly you weren't particularly happy at this stage, and you were beyond, sort of behind your smile, things weren't as good as they could be.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I was in about year 7, year 8 at school, I really struggled with my mental health, and I think my one way of coping was to look to everyone else as if I was really happy and I was really enjoying life, and I definitely succeeded at doing that. Yeah. having won an award for being the happiest person.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, actually the kind of persona I was putting on was really the opposite to how I was feeling, and behind that kind of smile, everything else was kind of falling apart around me.
And how did that manifest itself then? You mentioned you had met some problems perhaps with eating and things at that stage.
Yeah. So like, I've never really been able to stick my finger on the exact reason why, like, my eating deteriorated, my mental health deteriorated. But I think I'm sort of someone who likes a lot of control.
Yeah.
And I guess growing up, I never really had that as much as maybe I needed at the time. And it kind of, I think everything kind of just built up layer upon layer, and kind of just got to that kind of tipping point where the only way I could see control was to kind of control what I was eating.
Right.
And my weight and everything else. And it's kind of like, looking back at it now with like a more realistic view and a healthier mind, it's really stupid, because it's almost like you run a PB and you hit your time goal, and then you're like, right, I want to run faster now. It's like, oh well, I've hit this amount of meal for the day, right, I'll try and eat less tomorrow. So it's very kind of backwards way of thinking.
Yeah.
And you can see why people kind of spiral quite quickly out of control.
Yeah. And did you sort of realise that was happening at the time? Did you reach out to anyone, or did you kind of just keep it within yourself?
It's hard to kind of explain, but you sort of do realise at the time something's not quite right, because everyone around you isn't doing the same thing. You're trying very hard to cover up what you're doing.
Yeah.
but at the same time you're also in denial and you can't see what you're doing to yourself. And it's only when you step away and kind of reassess what you were doing later on that you realize like how much of a desperate state you're in. And I think I was really lucky that my parents and my school noticed those kind of signs and kind of stepped in and took control, much against my own will, to stop myself going further and further down into a hole.
And how did they help them? What was kind of your route out of that hole that you were falling into?
If I'm honest, it was about 6 years of counselling, family therapy, anything that could potentially kind of just help stabilize my mind and kind of put myself or put perspective on kind of reality. And I think I was really lucky, like my parents supported me. I didn't have to ever go into hospital as an inpatient or anything like that. And you hear horror stories of other people's experiences. So I feel like, yeah, I was really lucky. I still was able to continue going to school and things like that. And although I was sort of not stopped from doing sport, but it was definitely pulled back a little bit. That was kind of a big incentive for me. It was like the healthier you get, the more running you can do. And I think that was a massive thing for me, being able to kind of put health into perspective and realize that actually you can't be successful at anything if you're struggling to walk for 5 minutes without feeling lightheaded.
So when did the running come in then? So was that during your battles with eating that you started to pick up the running?
A little bit, yeah. So I started as a failed heptathlete when I was about 12 years old. And my school competed in like the ESSA School Cup. So you had to do a running event and you had to do a field event. And we actually won nationals 1 year doing it. So we were quite successful as a team. But no one ever wanted to do any distance running. Like no one wanted the 800, no one wanted the 1500. And I wanted to be on the team, so I opted to do those events.
Yeah.
So I started it and instantly kind of fell in love with running. And I think mainly because I was quite successful in our very, very small county of Worcestershire.
You can only put what's put in front of you, Jenny.
Exactly. You can only compete against those on the start line.
Yeah.
That I kind of, instantly kind of fell in love with running and wanted to push myself further and see what I could achieve, which kind of did coincide with all my other kind of issues at the same time, which some people could probably look at it negatively and say, oh, well, it's because of the running, it caused you to not want to eat properly. And you can see those sort of connotations, but I actually think that running probably helped me climb out of that hole in the end.
Right. Okay. Well, why was that? Was it just because you had advice that you needed to eat, or what was the kind of, did it help? Was it the control thing? What was the kind of, how did it running help you move out of that?
I think because I'm a really competitive person, and running was this thing that allowed me to compete against other people, but compete against myself as well.
Yeah.
And I was basically told that if you didn't, you know, gain weight, you didn't eat, you didn't get healthy, you couldn't run. And at the time, I wanted to be on the team to do this competition. I wanted to go to English schools. I wanted to run in the mini marathon. And I wanted to do all these things that I knew I would not be allowed to do unless I kind of pulled myself together. And that was the main thing that kind of gave me the kick up the arse, really.
Yeah, great. Because it's usually kind of the other way around, isn't it? The running it is often to a detriment of the desire to eat, and everyone kind of this ideal of being light and thin. But it's nice to hear a story of how actually running gave you the motivation to take yourself out of that period of let's say disordered eating.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even like today, it still has that kind of negative association with like being underweight and running. And I think there are a lot of stories that are coming out where running has actually been a positive in people's kind of desperate situations. And I think that needs to be recognized and definitely like put into practice in like helping people kind of get through tough times.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a long kind of battle. But when did you start seeing like starting to enjoy and feel healthy and start to compete well? When how did that kind of work out?
I was relatively lucky in the fact that I kind of started to see improvements quite quickly, and by the time I was about year 9 at school, which I think must be like 15,
yeah,
I was back to kind of enjoying life, and you know, socializing with friends again and running well.
Yeah.
And as an under 17, I think I came second at the mini marathon one year, and I won the McCain Cross Challenge or Cup or whatever it was,
yeah,
at the time. So I did kind of see improvements quite quickly,
yeah,
which I think helped, because it kind of was the physical proof that, you know, you got to be healthy to run well.
Yeah. And how was that? How did that kind of that winning make you feel? Like, from obviously having sort of dark days with problems with other areas of your life, how did the running feed into the rest of your life, I guess?
As athletes, winning is kind of like the final piece of the jigsaw. We all train really, really hard to kind of get across the line first. Mm. And I think, you know, we'd all be lying if we said it didn't matter.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, it's kind of that, it kind of cements that, you know, the work you put in is worth it. And running is very much, you get out what you put in.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, kind of winning or crossing the line first is really special. But I think also for a lot of races, it's what you personally achieve as, yeah, well. You don't necessarily need to get a gold medal to feel like you've won.
Yeah.
And I think being kind of realistic and setting yourself like achievable goals and things is also just as satisfying and special when you hit them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to say that you then, unfortunately, things started to go well and you had another kind of quite major setback. What, yeah, happened when you're, is it when you're 17?
Yeah. So when I was 17, I got this autoimmune disease called Henoch-Schönlein purpura, abbreviated to HSP for short, because I cannot spell it to save my life. and yeah, I never feel like, as dramatic as it sounds, feel like I do it justice when I try to describe what actually happened to me. Mm. But basically I just ended up in hospital for a very long time. And my kind of whole body kind of just stopped functioning properly. My kidneys started failing and my intestines twisted and I kind of went purple from vasculitis and stuff.
Oh my God.
So it was pretty terrifying, and I didn't really know, or we didn't really know what was going on with me. And it took quite a while to kind of get a diagnosis.
Wow. So how long did this affect you then? So you were in hospital for a long period.
I was in hospital maybe for like 3 months, and then I was in and out of hospital for about 2 years.
God.
I actually only got discharged in 2018, bearing in mind I was admitted in 2012.
Wow. So you were still, there were still repercussions right through to the 6 years later.
Yeah. So I had like a lot of protein in my kidneys, and they were really worried that I was going to get like kidney failure or end up on dialysis or something. So yeah, I had to keep getting it checked every 6 months for a long time just to make sure I was okay.
And what happened with running then? So you had to stop completely, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. I think I didn't run for nearly 2 years. So I actually, I came off a massive high. So I came off coming second behind Jess at the mini marathon.
This is Jess Judd,
yeah, yeah, which was like a massive like moment for me.
Yeah.
To then kind of, yeah, not running for a couple of years and not having, just not being able to run, not wanting to run, not wanting to get out of bed. I was just so drained and so tired that didn't even want to do it. So yeah,
that was a pretty dark period in your life. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, no, it was a really hard time of my life. And unfortunately, you kind of resort to your old coping mechanisms in a way.
Mm.
So it was all about control and wanting like to kind of control what I could at the time, which wasn't a lot. And like your mental health suffered a little bit, and I just got really kind of upset and lonely and low. And kind of struggled for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Again, but I think this time round, I was able to kind of rationalize it a lot better.
Yeah.
And kind of realize that, you know, I'm actually physically really unwell right now, so I got to give myself a little bit of slack.
Yeah. Okay. And what were your coping mechanisms? How did you positively deal with it? Obviously your friends and family were around. Was there other ways that you were able to kind of draw support from
it? Yeah. Well, I think a big thing for me was that I quickly saw how fast life can kind of get taken away from you.
Yeah.
And like, as cliched as it sounded, or as it sounds, you've got to kind of take every day don't take every day for granted.
Yeah.
And I think I kind of had this like a lot more motivation once I kind of got healthy again to ensure that I kind of lived by this like little motto and you know, get up every day and do things you want to do, enjoy it, you know, don't just kind of plod along because you don't know when you might be lying in a hospital bed for again.
Yeah. And do you think it's helped you with your racing then? Do you think, well, it's hard to say a near-death experience has helped you with your racing, but do you think you go into races now with a clearer head? Do you think it has enabled you to perform at a high level because you're now a bit more go-lucky and carefree?
I think definitely yes. I kind of used to get very caught up in like running and training and racing and results and times and positions. Whereas now, like, if I have a bad race, I moan about it for half an hour and I crack on because, you know, I'm lucky to be able to stand on the start line and do the race in the first place. If I have a bad training session, it's the same thing. I'm going to be able to get up in the morning and go for another run. And I think that definitely helps when it comes to racing and training and competing at a high level and wanting to perform well. You can't expect to be at your best every single day, and you're going to have times where you're not achieving what you want to achieve. And I think if you kind of let that get in your mind and constantly go round and round and round, it's not gonna help you in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so obviously now you've managed to get back to full training. Like, do you have to be quite cautious with how you train as a result, or are you able to kind of go at it the same as everybody else? You know, you're able to train the same way?
No, I'm pretty much able to do as much as anyone else would be able to do.
Yeah. Okay.
There's nothing no health issues I have now that would prevent me from training. So I'm really lucky about that. I have had two knee operations, so I have to be a little bit careful of my knees.
Okay.
But aside from that, no, I'm really lucky and privileged to be in a position where I get all the support and help that I need to be able to train at as high a level as I can.
And other than this kind of this more maybe happy-go-lucky attitude to racing and this ability to sort of compartmentalize bad performances, what is your strength? How is your coach able to, you know, this, you've been running so well, what do you possess, or how is, do you think your coach is able to get the best out of you?
It's taken a lot of work, and it takes a continued work. Chris Jones, who coaches me, has kind of made me buy into science a little bit. Instead of running everything as hard as I possibly can, I now use a heart rate monitor a little bit more, which controls my runs a little bit better. I've had to believe that easy running is actually a thing, and that you don't have to kind of smash every single session that you do to make improvements. And also, I think one of the biggest things that I've kind of bought into is training with other people. As a younger athlete, I kind of was very much, it's my way or the highway, and I would do exactly what I wanted to. I wouldn't train with anybody. And since I've moved to Cardiff, I train with Charlotte and Clara a lot. And
that's Charlotte Arthur and Clara.
Yeah. Evans.
Yeah.
It's brought me on massively. So I think, those are really valuable things that I've kind of discovered in the last couple of years.
Great. And are you sort of, do a lot of stuff in the weight room and stuff? Do you do a lot of additional things on top of this, getting out and hitting?
Yeah. So we're really lucky. Actually, recently we've got a new strength and conditioning coach who has kind of put a program together for us. And I've noticed some massive differences in the last 6 months from kind of buying into the gym. I can't say it's my favorite part of training, but I've definitely noticed that I've got a lot stronger.
Yeah.
And touch wood, I haven't actually had to miss a day of training through injury for 2 years. So
wow, great.
I can see that the gym is working.
Yeah, yeah. And what is your key? So what would you see is your favorite type of running? What's your favorite session you do in the course of a week, ooh, or the course of the training cycle?
So we have do two hard sessions in a week. So we train on Tuesday and Friday usually. Mm. And then most of the rest of our week is easy running, and then a long run on a Sunday. And yeah, we actually go out again on a Sunday evening and do hill reps, which isn't that nice.
Yeah. Nice running on tired legs up a hill. Great.
Yeah. Lovely. Yeah. Just what you want on your Sunday evening.
Yeah.
If I had to pick a favorite session, I'd probably go with something like 10 by a K off 60 seconds. We have a little loop in a park that we use, and it's just one of those sessions that we can come back to every month and see if improvements and stuff. And it's not one of those sessions where you kind of smash out as hard as you can. It's more controlled. But over the last few months, I kind of noticed that my heart rate's dropped for the same pace, and that's quite a pleasing thing to see.
Yeah. Is it looking at around 10K pace or a little bit slower than that?
Usually around 10K pace. So we usually alternate between maybe 3:15, 3:10, 3:15, 3:10.
Yeah,
okay. For the K's.
Cracking. Yeah, I remember doing something similar at Ladywell back in the day, a long time ago. Even though I stopped. Yeah. I live too far away from Ladywell to get.
Just jog over for a quick session.
Yeah, get on a boat. Get on a plane. Yeah.
Yeah. Easy.
So, like, our focus has been spent mental health. It's been great to chat to you about kind of like, and for you to be open about how it affected you and how you're managing it, I guess. Like,
yeah.
Do you still feel you are managing it, managing your mental health? Isn't it you put thought into?
Not really. I feel like I'm kind of very lucky to kind of be able to say that was a part of my life that really affected me, but I've been able to move on and move past it now.
Yeah.
Which I feel is a reason why I can talk about it. I think if you're still amid those kind of situations, it's quite hard to rationalize them.
Yeah.
So I feel like, yeah, I definitely feel like I've moved on now. But I think everyone has ways that they need to manage or cope with day-to-day life, and there are loads of things that you can kind of put into place if you need to.
Yeah.
And like, I think for me, it's getting out and doing things that I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
Realizing that every day isn't going to be spectacular, and I'm very much the type of person who now is like, well, if it doesn't make me happy, as selfish as it seems, I'm not going to go and do it, because it's, you know, life's too short for that.
Yeah. Be more selfish to look after yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I'm worried these days, like the modern world, man, it scares me. I've got a daughter, one year old, and she, I'm worried about social media and the sort of thing, and everyone has to be perfect, right? And it's a,
yeah,
it's a scary world for teenagers, but that's good advice. Like, do what you need to do. And
yeah,
there are good and bad days.
They say comparison is the thief of all happiness, isn't it?
Yeah, I like that. That's the quote for the day, I think. Yeah. Yeah, I'll go and tell my daughter. She won't understand what I'm saying to her, but I might write it on her wall or something.
Write on her wall.
Yeah, yeah, excellent.
Definitely.
Well, I better not keep you too long, but I've got three more quick fire questions.
Perfect.
And they are, I don't know the answer to the next one, but you did mention Hollyridge, one of the best places to race, but if you could be anywhere running right now, where would it be?
Okay, this is a bit out there, but in the spring this year, we went to Albuquerque for training camp, and we had a day at the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
And it's somewhere I really want to go back to and explore, and I think it would be horrific to run around, but if I could run anywhere right now, it would be the Grand Canyon.
Great. Yeah. Could you run up it? Is there a possibility to run up and down?
We did meet a lady who had hiked from the bottom to the top, but she looked awfully ill. So I don't know if it's something I'd want to do.
She might have been awfully ill before she did it, though. You know, you never know. It could have been her last dying wish to go up and down. Yeah. Anyway. Our second question is, recommend us something. So it could be anything from book, film, or an experience.
Recommend you something. So my boyfriend actually bought me a puzzle for Christmas.
Yeah.
And I've started doing it, and it's actually a really relaxing thing to do with a cup of tea.
I like
especially in the winter when it's pretty cold and dire outside.
Okay.
So I recommend that if you want something to do that's just relaxing and doesn't require you to really think, get a puzzle.
Perfect. I got into crosswords this Christmas. That's another thing. Just sit down with a crossword is a pretty good thing to do.
Yeah.
Good recommendation. Definitely. And in your opinion, what's the greatest endurance performance of all time?
Sub 2 hour marathon, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
I think I watched it on the TV before I raced the Cardiff Cross Challenge last year.
Yeah.
And it definitely got me psyched.
Yeah. It was incredible. What was nuts about that though is it you know, it broke the 2 hours and then across the water. Is it Bridget Koska? I forget.
Yes.
She just obliterates Paula Radcliffe's records. Like, what the hell is going to happen this weekend?
Absolutely crazy. Yeah. An absolutely crazy weekend.
Yeah.
But one that will probably go down in history.
Yeah, exactly. Well, good luck for this weekend in Valencia. This pod will come out after that happens. So we hope we'll look out for your result with interest. But
fingers
crossed you won't fall over on the curves of the indoor track this winter.
Let's hope so.
And you'll run well. And we'll see you at Highgate this year, I guess. This is a
definitely. Few months' time. It's already in the diary.
Great stuff. Fantastic. Thanks, Jenny. Thanks
for
chatting.
Thank you. Bye. Cheers.